Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hey, everybody, it's Devin.
And Kate in the pod lab.
In the flesh.
In the pod lab.
Welcome to Med Crimes.
In the pod lab.
I missed being down here. My blanket was preheated. I am toasty in my cloud. It has just been too long.
It really has been.
We've been remote for like the last 2 months.
Yeah, genuinely 2 months. And when I say like it's been, I mean, it's like fine. Like it's a good backup.
It's fine.
It's fine
when we need to get the job done. But
this is so much better.
You can't feed off each other as well. I mean, we feed off each other fine.
I mean, yeah.
Really. You know, we could be like, you know, on the old classic, like paper telephones on a string. Feed off each other just fine.
Absolutely.
But
it's just better. The vibes are better. The vibes are immaculate here right now.
Yeah.
It's a good moment.
I'm on a new blanket because Sally ate my old one.
We all, those of you who've listened for more than 5 minutes know that my golden retriever likes to consume specifically electric blankets.
Yep.
And shred them.
That's Sally.
Yep, that's Sally. So yeah, anyway, thanks a lot, Sally. And we have new electric blankets.
I hope
Sally
everyone
doesn't
had
have
a nice
to.
Holiday yesterday.
I hope everyone is still recovering from the candy hangover like I am.
Yep.
Yep. We're all just eating all kinds of candy. Lots of family time. Lots of running around, finding the eggs. It's been exciting.
Love the egg hunt.
Love it.
I wish I could do an egg hunt.
Me
personally.
Too. And experience the magic.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be nice?
I hear they have adult egg hunts now.
See, that's what we should do is get big eggs, fill them with like nips.
Yeah.
You know, like some $20 bills.
Scratch tickets. That's sweet.
100%. Like little energy shots, you know?
Do we not celebrate this holiday together?
We have wonderful ideas. We're in the wrong podcast niche.
Although, however, we've done that. We've had Easter together several times.
Oh, we have.
I can think of at least 2 times.
Yeah, me too.
In our friendship.
Yeah, but we did not think of putting together an adult egg hunt, which I think was a hugely missed opportunity.
That.
Yep. Little bottles of ibuprofen, you know, all the adult stuff that we all just need.
Yep. Sometimes.
Oh my God. Some icy hot. Yes. Oh my God. That's next year. Next year, guys. Anybody else have an adult egg hunt? Any good ideas? We'd love to hear it.
That's hilarious. Goals.
We have a new Patreon, Danny O'Keefe.
Danny!
So I sang your name, Danny O'Keefe, which makes you extra special. And
Danny boy.
Continue.
Do, 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 do.
That was beautiful.
You're welcome.
I have a critter for you. You are the Yale. Yale like the university. Yes. And a Yale originates in Roman mythology. It is an antelope-like creature with long, swivelly horns, and it symbolizes proud defense and strength. And it is actually like the inspiration for the mascot from Yale. And like that's like what Yale was named after. Isn't that neat?
I love that.
So anyway, Danny O'Keefe, you're the Yale.
Hey, Yale.
Woo! We got part 2 of Colin Howell. And this guy's the worst.
I was just telling Kate, I'm like, I want the recap to get the details again.
100%.
But I specifically remember this guy being a fucktard.
You specifically remember correctly.
Yep.
And that is a very accurate depiction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Colin Howell was a staunchly religious individual.
That's right.
Remember how religious he was?
Oh, yeah.
That was like his entire personality.
I was fueled now.
Yes.
Yep.
Entire personality. He wanted to go to medical school. He ended up in the dentistry field and he graduated dental school and became a very successful dentist. And his life begins to spiral out of control. Like, we heard all about his religious roots in part 1. We heard about his dental practice. He met and got married to this wonderful young lady who kind of mortgaged her entire personality and self to be with this guy and try and make him happy. But it
Girls
seemed
don't
like
do that.
seemed like nothing really worked.
Let him do that for you.
Exactly. Things got really, really rocky. And essentially, he started having a lot of affairs. She kept finding out about it and very rightly got upset. She became depressed. She developed a drinking problem. And unfortunately, this whole situation culminated in Colin meeting and having an affair with this woman named Hazel and then wanting to like commit to this woman, but also not wanting to have to do the incredibly shameful thing of getting a divorce. Mm-hmm. And his Stigma. Solution was instead to murder his current wife.
Yeah, because there's less stigma or shameful things with that.
That's like way better. That's like 1,000 times better.
And I forget. I remember ranking up how many pregnancies he had had.
Oh my God, yes.
Well, we had to like, what, 7?
7, I think.
Between, there was multiple
abortions.
Because they had
4 kids and 3 abortions, right?
There was multiple
right?
of those, and it was just like...
So, I mean, this poor woman, he had put this woman through the actual ringer. And we are going to kind of talk more about the next steps. And when we left off, he had just finished murdering his wife, Leslie. And what he had done was he took a hose and he fed it from his vehicle in the garage through the living room at night after she had had a lot to drink and she had passed out on the couch. And he created like a tent over her with a blanket and fed the hose in there. And she died of carbon monoxide poisoning.
Awful.
So if you haven't listened to part one, please go back and listen because there's a lot more detail there. Trigger warnings for this are essentially the same as the first episode. We're going to be talking about themes of suicide a little bit. Obviously, domestic violence and sexual assault. So with that, here we go.
Fucktard.
Very accurate. Very accurate. So, and remember, Colin standing in the church was like his number one priority. So like he went to dental school to get like essentially the status, but he volunteered a lot for his church. He did a lot of work for his church and he valued above all where he stood within his religious mm-hmm. community. Mm-hmm. So in the spring of 1991, this affair that I had mentioned that turned into, you know, them sort of falling in love and wanting to escape their current partners was with a fellow church parishioner. And her name, of course, was Hazel Buchanan. And it was May 18th in 1991 when Colin waited till his children were tucked into bed and, as I described earlier, took his wife's life while she lay on the couch. And it only took a few minutes. It was like a very, right. very quick act. And the crime was really quiet, and evidently it did not even wake his children. So the hockey stick that we had described before that came from my house was not even necessary. It was all very, like, insidious, very sinister, very quiet. Now, he then picks up the phone, and he calls Hazel, and he says to her, like, hey, my half of the plan is good to go. And he picked up his wife's body, and he carries it outside, and he goes to the trunk of his car and he puts her in the trunk of his car. And part two of the plan is now in play. So we are not even done with this night here. We're not even done with this like
whole
initial crime.
I wish y'all could see my face right now. I'm not
I know,
saying
she's
anything,
like,
but I'm looking
bing!
At it like, why?
Yes.
Like he couldn't, I don't, not that I want the children to wake her up, but he's not even trying to make this look natural. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, I know. Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
He is like really good at covering his tracks, like in general. And so it is wicked sketchy. And this is just the type of guy he is. He's all about what things look like on the outside. He's very in tune with that. And then Hazel's responsibility was to ensure that she was holding up her half of the plan, which was to somehow administer a handful of lorazepam tablets or Ativan tablets to her husband, Trevor. Now, remember, Hazel is also married, and she also has this guy.
And
this
how did
partner.
She get a hold of him?
So lorazepam, we've talked about lorazepam before. Mm-hmm. It's a benzodiazepine, heavily sedative-like effects. It's a muscle relaxant and reduces anxiety. And it is often used, or at least it was around this time, as a pre-medication for dental work. So Colin...
For those nervous Nellies.
Yes, Colin would have, in theory, had very ready access to... Okay. All of the lorazepam mm-hmm. he could ever want or need. And he probably did routinely use that for his patients in his dental practice. So what Trevor, However, when you use way too much, especially like a quote-unquote handful, which is what was described, we have no way of knowing exactly how much, but what she had given him was a handful of lorazepam tablets, which would have been way too much. Now, a death from an overdose of lorazepam is actually difficult. I mean, you can get very sedated, but it's not like a narcotic where it reduces your respiratory drive drastically. It can reduce respiratory drive, but not to that same degree like an opiate can.
Yeah, I guess I think you're right. Like I'm thinking about like an OD on a benzo,
mm-hmm.
and you're right. It's usually that in combination with something else.
Exactly.
But straight that is...
It can be dangerous. It can kill you
for sure. Yeah, it's definitely. But I mean, like.
Yep. Yeah. It's not quite, sensitive from a CNS mm-hmm. standpoint as we are to, but what it would have done is put him into an incredibly deep sleep and reduce his respiratory drive a little bit. Colin had called her. She said, yes, I've given him the Ativan. He is asleep. And let's move on to part two. Now, what she had done was crushed up the lorazepam and she sprinkled it into a tuna sandwich and fed him the sandwich for dinner. And so after his meal, he very quickly grew very tired and he went to bed and he passed out. And so Hazel gets off the phone with Colin and she peeks in on both of her kids to make sure that her kids are asleep. And then a few minutes later, Colin pulls up into the driveway of the Buchanan residence and he backs into their open garage. She admittedly, like later on, would go on to say, like, I was so nervous. But as soon as he pulled in the driveway, it was like everything was going to be OK. He's here. He's going to take care of
Hazel,
all.
Come
He's going to take care of everything. Right. So Hazel brings Colin into the house and she directs him to the bedroom where her husband was sleeping. And just as he had done an hour prior, Colin took a hose, that same hose, and he ran it from his vehicle in the garage in through the living room and into the bedroom. And held it right next to Trevor's face to try to
These
do the same thing.
Innocent people.
I know.
That are married to monsters.
I know. So they had made no efforts to like physically restrain Trevor because they didn't really feel like it was necessary. He had already taken a shitload of Ativan. There's really no reason he would be able to fight back, like in theory. But he did. This guy was so fucking tough.
Fucking go, Trevor.
He was a tough guy.
I mean,
he's a police officer. He's a police officer. So he's like, you know, he's a tough guy.
Even on the benzos.
Even on the benzos, somehow. Even on the benzos, this guy put up a fight and made it really freaking difficult. He was not easy to overpower. Like, as soon as they got into the room, Trevor kind of stirred and Colin like jumped on top of Trevor to try to hold him down and hold the hose by his mm-hmm. face. But Trevor managed to wiggle out of that somehow.
Badass.
There was like an actual physical fight happening. I mean, this guy must have been the amount of lorazepam that was in his system. If what is being said is true, it's like wild that he was coherent enough to do any of this, like to be conscious at all.
Did
That's a freaking miracle. No, unfortunately, he does not survive.
Damn.
So
I was so hopeful.
I know. Now, after a few minutes of both of them wrestling together with the hose still leaking carbon monoxide into the room where they all are, Colin starts becoming symptomatic from the carbon monoxide.
Reap what you sow, dude.
Fuck around and find out. Am
yes,
I right? Let's
yes.
not do that. So Hazel is like outside the room. She's not involved in this. She's letting Colin fucking handle all of this. So Colin managed to grab the hose and essentially like hold him down for a few moments and like shove it into his face and even somewhat into his mouth. But Trevor yanks on it and then Colin overpowers Trevor again. He's able to get the duvet, like the comforter, over mm-hmm. his head to create a tent like he did mm-hmm. for his wife. And finally, after he was able to maneuver himself into a position where he was consistently overpowering Trevor, Trevor inhaled a lethal amount of carbon monoxide mm-hmm. and eventually succumbed to the poisoning. So with all of that, though, Colin's still symptomatic. He's anxious. He's nauseated. He's a little dizzy. He's having heart palpitations and he's feeling faint.
Good.
Yeah, good. So he knows he's got to like clean up and get out of there. Mm-hmm. So he tells Hazel, go shut off the car, get the hose out of here. I mean, it's wild that Trevor put up the like I said, like it's crazy that this man was coherent enough to do what he did. And I'm so glad that it's so sad that he didn't survive this. But he fucking went down screaming, fighting, like really trying. Like, this guy was so tough. He just didn't have a chance. It's so unfair that this happened. So Colin kind of like takes a minute, breathes some fresh air and recovers himself. And then he's like, all right, I got some shit to do. I got to sweep all of this under the rug. That's my next step. That's always my next step after I fuck some shit up. So Hazel obviously served as an accomplice, but shortly after the murders, Hazel began tossing all of the incriminating evidence into the fireplace. Among the items were...
I was going to say, what kind of evidence?
Yep. So... So her plan was like, I'm going to handle like all the household evidence and you're going to take care of the bodies. I don't want to be around the bodies and do any of that. So she took a couple of pairs of the pairs of shoes that they had both worn, put them in the fireplace. She had burned the hose in the fireplace that he had brought over from his house. And I think both of their shirts they ended up burning and some other like little things from around the house that could have been. I think a sheet that had some blood on it. I think they ended up burning things.
It's interesting.
I know.
Why can't the shoes just go with the body? I don't know. What's he doing with
Well, I think.
I know you're going to get there, but like.
Yeah. So I think that was more of like a, if the police came in and did an investigation and found like footprints so that they never found like the matching shoes to the footprints and could never like tie that specifically to one person.
Right.
That's at least my assumption. Yeah. So
we're getting all CSI-y.
Oh, I know. Here we are. I know. So Colin then takes Trevor's body out of the house, puts it in the trunk with
Wifey.
With Wifey. Now, he also thought to make sure that Trevor was like clean, not looking disheveled, and had shoes on his feet, even though he had just woken up. And I'll get to why. So around this time, Hazel comes out to check on him and see how he's doing. He directed Hazel then to go back in the house, make sure you vacuum, make sure you change all the rest of the sheets, make sure you like neaten up and make sure everything looks really, really like clean, just in case there's any other like microscopic evidence anywhere. Mm-hmm. And Colin then drives to a beach in the village of Castle Rock. And along the way, he stopped at the side of a road to pick up a bicycle that he had planned to use for his escape that he had planted there earlier. And he knew the area was really secluded. Hazel also showed up in a different vehicle after the fact, after she had cleaned up a little bit. So this property was really secluded. And actually, it belonged to Leslie's father, who died suddenly in April from that heart attack. We mentioned that in part one. He had this cottage as like a vacation home, but it hadn't sold yet as part of his estate. So the place was like vacant. It had been for several months. So he was like, perfect. This is a perfect opportunity. So Colin had access to it, obviously, because he had access to everything. So they drove to the cottage and they pulled into the garage in the cottage's house, and he staged this whole scene. So he moved Trevor's body from the trunk to the driver's seat and then positioned Leslie's body in the passenger seat. And he even put like a cassette player with like headphones over Leslie's ears to make it seem like she'd been listening to music. And for the final touch, he had put some family photos like spread out on the dashboard.
So he's trying to make like a whole dual suicide.
Exactly.
Like, we're so devastated over our marriage infidelities with our people that like we have to just
basically So
without any shoes on.
He put shoes back on Trevor. Like he physically like put shoes on Trevor's body so that it would look like it wouldn't be suspicious. So
I'm
then
so focused on the shoes.
I know. It's okay. And then Colin went and did the hose thing. He took a vacuum hose. And he connected the vacuum hose to the exhaust and then ran it through the car and then turned on the car engine. And he climbed out of the car and it all just looked like a death by suicide, like a double suicide situation.
As much as I hate this, part of me is like, well, that's smart because carbon monoxide was the cause of death.
Yes.
He's just relocating it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Don't do that, people.
Yeah, no, it's not.
I'm saying it's smart, but like, no, that's terrible.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Atrocious.
It's so bad.
And it makes me hate him even more.
Oh, yeah. Don't worry. We're not done hating on this guy. It's the worst.
Aggression.
I know. So he had left that bike nearby. So he leaves and he goes and gets on the bike and he starts pedaling his little butt cheeks off to get back to his house. And now the following day, Colin picks up the phone and he calls a church elder and he tells them, well, Leslie's missing. I don't know where she is. And Colin told the elder that he and Trevor had been involved in a physical altercation because he had had an affair with Hazel. And that afterward, Leslie and Trevor drove off together into the sunset to, I don't know, commiserate about their situation. Concerned, the church elder and another parishioner met with Colin and he revealed a letter that Leslie had supposedly written that night, which was like cryptic and inferred that they might end it all and stuff like that. It was just, you know, like such emotional distress and this, that, and the other thing. So he further fabricated everything.
All of this is better than just divorce.
Oh, yeah, way better. This is such a much healthier alternative than being honest and just taking the legal steps. So he then suggested to the church elder that Leslie and Trevor had taken the keys to her father's cottage before leaving that night, giving them a place to head for to help look for these people, right? So they assumed it was, you know, this whole drama gone wrong and that they would go to this cottage and find Leslie and Trevor like cooling off and just, you know, hopefully recovering from everything. So they checked the cottage and they didn't find anyone, but they hadn't looked in the garage because they just didn't look in the garage. And they let Colin know it seemed like Leslie and Trevor weren't there, that they couldn't find them. And he became like annoyed at their incompetence. And he was like, well, keep checking. Keep looking. Keep checking. Like, he really wanted to not be the one to find these people. So it was only on a third search of the property that a church elder accompanied by an off-duty police officer found Leslie Howell and Trevor Buchanan's deceased bodies in their vehicle.
And how long of a time?
This was like 24 hours after. They called the authorities. And then they broke the news to Colin, quote unquote, who just like pretended to be. Yeah, exactly. That is actually the exact sound, I think, that he made. That was a recording of that moment. It seems like all of the steps that Colin had taken to make this look like a double suicide were successful because the officers quickly ruled the case a double suicide by carbon monoxide poisoning.
Nothing left suspicious.
There was nothing. No. And also, let's not forget that this guy's like a dentist. He's an upstanding member of the community and like he's a member of the church.
But like, wasn't the church knew about the affairs?
They did. Yeah.
And so there was no question of the timing. Like, man, this looks suspicious. Like, we just outed you guys.
I mean, I know it looks suspicious. But at the time, there was no physical evidence or no other like concern that pointed to like, holy shit, maybe this was not a suicide.
Oh.
So, considering Colin and Hazel's affair, it seemed like cut and dry, at least to authorities. Like, this is what happened. You know, they were heartbroken and decided to just end it all. So no criminal charges were ever pursued against Colin or Hazel for any of this. And it seemed like, oh, man, like we had gotten away with this. So 33-year-old Colin Howell and 29-year-old Hazel Buchanan moved on with their lives and enjoyed the fact that they got away with murder. Now, to his friends and family, to his friends and family, it seemed like he was not affected very heavily by his wife's death.
That's always the sign.
For me, I'm like, I would expect like some devastation, you know,
one
period of mourning, like, you know, some need for recovery. But this guy didn't like have any of that. If he was, you know, maybe they just wrote it off that he was like in shock or just like that he couldn't, you know, really function because of his grief or whatnot. But it just seemed like he didn't react in a very classic way to have his wife take her own life. So Hazel, on the other hand, seemed to take the deaths really hard. She felt extremely guilty. And she actually, for a period of time, kind of pulled away from Colin because it was painful for her to be around him after that whole situation. But also they felt like it was best mutually to spend some time apart so it didn't look, you know, really alarming.
Automatically, like.
Exactly. So Around 6 weeks later in the summer of 1991, they had kind of started to slowly resume their relationship, and they didn't want, you know, their homicidal actions to, you know, be not worth it. You know, this was the end game, was so that they could be together, you know.
Our homicidal actions.
Now, Hazel started having a really hard time being intimate fully with Colin after
because they're both murderers?
That's exactly what it was.
So she has a conscience?
So this really kind of changed, like, the physical dynamic in the relationship. And Colin had a huge problem with this.
Like man, how do I feel about sleeping with a murderer?
Well, that's the thing. She really was, like, just... That whole thing, like, really changed her, you mm-hmm. know, because she has a conscience. I mean, she's guilty. She's just as, mm-hmm. she's as guilty as he is, just about. But she has a conscience about the whole thing, and she's just having a really hard time coping with all of this and feeling like she can move on. But Colin is having a big problem with the fact that Hazel isn't wanting to be intimate with
Why
him.
Why won't you have sex with me?
I mean, and, like, think about this guy's history. You know, he was addicted to pornographic material, and he just could not help but impregnate anything that, you know, mm-hmm. came along. And so not being intimate with his partner is, like, not an option for Colin. Like, he's just gonna be yep. intimate with anything that will allow it or not.
Like,
so he offers up this, like, weird solution, which is something that he is very familiar with during his work as a dentist, which is laughing gas, also called nitrous oxide. It has medical purposes. It's used commonly in dental settings mm-hmm. for some sedation to help people tolerate procedures. Labor and delivery, it's often given for the same reason, can just be give just some light relief, pain mm-hmm. relief, anesthesia, can induce euphoria, and it has some analgesic properties. Now, there are off-label, like, side effects include stimulating and, like, the androgynous zones, okay. basically, like, stimulating the libido a little mm-hmm. bit. It's not really well understood, and it's not been consistently studied, so there's, like, very limited data to support anything consistent on this. But it's a thing that Colin might have read about and thought, hey, let's try this. Let's give it a frickin' whirl. The use of laughing gas apparently relaxed Hazel enough to allow Colin to do his thing. But, I mean, one could argue that that is not consensual. Mm. She is, like, heavily
100%.
Under the influence yeah. and anesthetized, for lack of a better word.
So how did he convince her to do that?
Oh, she was like, she wants to fix the relationship. Like, and she's thinking, like, maybe I'll take this and I'll take the edge off, and, like, maybe it'll, like, make me want to be intimate with you. But I think more than anything else, it anesthetized her, put her to sleep, and Colin just did his thing. And she did not participate. Which is really upsetting and fucking sad.
I mean, yeah.
And what's unclear where on the spectrum this lands. I mean, to me, yes, maybe she consented to taking the substance to try and see if it would change her attitude a little bit about being intimate. I don't know that she was able to provide consent after.
It's definitely screwed up.
Right? I'm not crazy, right? Yeah. To me, that could is considered sexual assault to me.
Totally.
By this point, it seems like Colin just, like, wanted, you know, a body more than anything else. Like, he was not interested in, like, having a partner. And having, like, somebody in life, he was more interested in having, like, just a physical body. Doll. So these encounters started happening more frequently, where they would use nitrous oxide for Hazel, and that Colin would do his thing. And they were quickly creating this, like, very compulsive sexual urge for Colin that he had a hard time controlling. And Hazel eventually started to decline the nitrous and say, you know what, I don't really want to do this whole physical thing anymore, mm-hmm. which good for her, Damn. Like, for yeah. finally putting her freaking foot down. And she's like, I need to back away and, like, take
she's
some
probably realizing
some stop.
What she thought it was.
This is not what I want my future to be.
You know, murdering your husband mm-hmm. to be with your lover, who's then poisoning you
yep.
so that you can...
Exactly.
You know,
this is not yeah. what I envisioned. Like,
I
am
not... I don't
not...
know exactly what you envision when you choose to murder
either.
Your spouse.
I don't think that anybody was
that,
planning but... anything, yeah. you know? So, now, with Hazel kind of cooling off their physical relationship, Colin started turning his predatory ways to his patients. I fucking told you that this got way worse. So again, this guy has like a compulsive sexual problem, right? Like since like adolescence, basically, mm-hmm. is when this like really started. So it's unclear exactly when he started doing this, but at some point after his wife and Trevor's murders, he started to sexually assault his female patients. And before surgery, he would often give them lorazepam or midazolam. Midazolam is in the same family as alprazolam, which is what was given to Trevor before he was murdered. Midazolam, same family, so it's a benzo, but it also has strong amnestic effects. So it will make you like, it will impair your ability to form new memories.
So
right?
Like remember what happened.
Yes,
you're
exactly.
You're not only like relaxed and calm, yes. You forget.
And this is why it's a preferred drug before things like dental procedures or medical procedures. Things like colonoscopies and EGDs and stuff like that will often get midazolam prior. Mm-hmm. So he would sedate his patients, and when they were unconscious and unable to form new memories and defenseless, he would then grope them, touch them, and do whatever it is that he wanted to do in that moment. And in the aftermath of the incidents, the vast majority of patients had, you know, would have no idea what happened to them. And the exact, because of this, it's actually not really known how many people he did this to, because it's very possible he did this to way more people that just never came forward because they had no freaking idea.
I mean, think about how many people they see in a day, how many patients they see.
That's the thing. Yeah, no, 8, 10, 12, like on a busy day. And he could have been doing this to half of his patients, like his women, you know what I mean? So it could have been any number of people, could have been hundreds. Yeah. So there were, at the very least, 6 known assault victims who were able to make allegations against him after all of this happened, that had some kind of memory or evidence or physical symptom or something that was really alarming to them, and they came forward. But again, Colin Howell is most devoted to just getting away with all of this crap and looking really shiny and pristine on the outside while being an absolute piece of garbage on the inside.
It's always the religious ones.
Yeah. Why?
I'm sorry. Come on.
Yep. I know. Why? We talked about this before. Why?
You think about it. You know, the Catholic priest scandal. You have that. You know, you have a lot of, you know, biblical people that devote their life to, you know, strong religious beliefs.
There's a lot of really good religious people out there.
Things. Of course there are.
But there's a lot of really shitty religious people out there that are very pious and very holier than thou and then do shit like this on the side. Why?
Yeah.
You know? Like I said before, you know, if you're going to
be the worst of the worst,
if you're going to be a garbage human, at least advertise yourself that way. Yeah. You know, at least say, hello, I'm a garbage human and this is my dumpster and it's on fire. Like we said, call it a day. Just own your garbageness. You know, it's just like really sad. Now, Colin, in a last-ditch effort to save whatever it was he had with Hazel, actually proposed to Hazel. And to her credit, she said, fuck you. No, I do not want this to continue. She had somewhat moved on from the entire thing. And she was like, this guy's just like, you know, drugging me so that I'll tolerate having sex with him. Like, this is not sustainable, dude. No, I'm not. This is not what I was
picturing.
It's getting
worse and worse and worse.
Things are just unraveling. So even though she was an accomplice, Hazel was Colin's victim too. And their relationship, she had deemed it completely over. She's like, this is just not going to move forward. So in 1996, 37-year-old Colin Howell left Hazel and he sought out a new partner and a new lover, someone he knew, someone who like maybe just knew nothing about his past and he could just like start over with. So he, that day, actually, the day that Hazel had rejected him, he later went to a singles mixer for people in the Christian faith. So he's like immediately ready to move on. He's like, no, like my old supply is cut off. Mm-hmm. So I need like a new supply right now. So he goes to this Christian faith singles mixer and he met Kyle Jorgensen, who was a 30-year-old single mother of 2 who had recently moved to Ireland from America. And less than a year after meeting, Colin and Kyle got married. And Kyle had no idea of any of Colin's past. How would she? And it had been about 6 years at this point since Colin had murdered his wife and Trevor. But when Kyle walked down the aisle, again, she had no idea of how his first marriage really ended. What Colin had told her is that they had just grown apart. He had regrettably had some affairs, and the two just, everybody just kind of moved on. Mm-hmm. So she knew that there was an affair, but she did not know that, obviously, that there was any sort of murder.
That she was so, quote unquote, distraught about it that she decides to commit suicide.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, so, yep, that whole situation just, he just totally put a Band-Aid over it. So they were both very much in love. She was eager to, you know, intermingle the two parents' children and be like this new blended family. You know, she had two kids of her own. Colin had four kids. And they moved into this big home to accommodate all these children. And in the summer of 1998, Kyle gave birth to their son, their joint son, Eric. And it seemed like Colin had finally sort of like gotten the life that he had hoped for. But he was feeling very guilty, not about the murders, but he was feeling religious guilt.
Come on.
I know. I'm like, this is what you have feelings about after everything that you've done? This is what you feel shitty about? Like, bro, come on. So a few months after their son was born, and I don't know if maybe it was his son being born that made him want to get things off his chest and made him want to confess and made him want to, you know, maybe turn over, like really just like,
bullshit,
pay his religious dues, what have you, for his crimes in the past. So Colin sits Kyle, his new wife, down on the couch in their living room, and he confesses. He said, so remember how I told you that we kind of just like fell apart and moved on and that she killed herself?
I killed her.
I did that. I not only killed her, but I also killed my mistress's husband, Trevor. And I staged their deaths to look like a suicide.
Can you imagine being the new wife right now?
Nope.
First of all.
Nope. First of all, he waited the perfect
had
amount
a brand
of time.
New baby with this man.
She's trapped in this marriage now.
Correct.
Because she had she's now tied to this man for life. And he did this on purpose. This motherfucker. I know he did this on purpose. He waited until
sadistic.
He's sadistic, and he's not an idiot. He knows that she's going to have a hell of a time leaving him now because she's got a child with him. At first, of course, Kyle was shocked and fucking horrified. And she told Colin that he needed to go to the police and to confess. And Colin agreed and said, I'm going to accept all of the consequences for my actions. And I don't know if it was, again, just like the year. It had been, what, 6 or 7 years today?
It was at least 6 years when they met, and yeah.
I don't know if maybe it was the years of, like, keeping the secrets that had just, like, taken that toll on him, or if it was the birth of his son, but after a few weeks, Kyle reconsidered, and she's like, you know what? I don't want to lose you. I don't want to break up this new family, so I don't want to, you know, break up everything that we've built together. So
don't do this at homes, folks.
They decided not to go to the police, and the couple together kept this secret. And it was just between those two and then Hazel, who's still alive. She's just kicking it.
Kicking around, not
right?
With him.
But she knows she's an accomplice, so she's not saying anything either. You know, Hazel wanted nothing to do with Colin or anything ever again, so she's staying the fuck out of his life. Now, despite the fact that the crimes were still a secret, Colin's demeanor shifted a little bit. And it might have really been, again, more of that religious guilt that he feels like he's not atoning for these sins or whatnot. Colin, I think, felt like, you know, confessing to my wife, maybe that was enough for me to just, like, you know, get absolved, at least
my
partially.
Total absolution.
You know? So he feels like a little bit more invigorated. He's like starting to, you know, feel a little better about the whole situation. And then in 1999, Colin starts a second business for his dental implants and cosmetic work in the same building as his general dentistry practice. So he's busting
he
into a new specialty.
Is he patients throughout all this?
Oh, yeah.
Throughout all this new marriage and everything, even though he's got another place to put it?
He's just gross. Very gross. Now, implants and cosmetic dentistry are a very lucrative field, and his focus is shifting a little bit towards like financial security, and he wants to make more money. He's got like this shitload of kids now that he's responsible for. So he claimed to be a specialist in dental implants, but his training in the area was probably very minimal. Like, he might have even just taken a single class on implantology, which to get like a board certification in implantology, like you have to go through like years of training for that. And you have to have like a preceptor, and you have to be observed doing procedures. He just skipped that whole thing and just started advertising that he would do dental implants because he just wanted to, you know, make all of the money. So his move to break into that without the appropriate training was incredibly reckless. But that did not stop him. It just seems like he wanted to just BS his way through anything. He's like, I got away with murder. Why the fuck can't I do this and just make a shitload of money? So he was like very overconfident in many aspects of his life, including dentistry, apparently. So he just continued to be super overconfident. And thanks to his carefully crafted reputation and him initially offering very low prices, he attracted patients from all over Ireland. And he was very quickly very successful. And it was actually enough that he could buy a new property down in Florida in the United States. And during this time, he and Kyle had 4 more children. So Colin's total number of offspring is
that
9.
Poor woman.
Yep. 9 kids. So he continued caring for all of them. And it seemed like he had finally gotten to where he wanted to be at in life, like with a wife who stayed home with all these kids that he's making.
Is it inappropriate if I say 9 kids and counting?
No.
Just saying. Kind of the same track right now.
Yep. Then, April 30th, 2007, 48-year-old Colin Howell received a really devastating phone call. His eldest son, who was now 22 years old, Matthew, had been killed in an accident. He had apparently fallen 4 stories down a stairwell in an apartment complex in Russia, where he had been studying for a semester abroad.
That's terrible.
Isn't that awful? So after this, it seems like Colin's life like spiraled, which that's appropriate. Yeah. Yes, my life would spiral. And he starts spending all of his savings, like everything that he had saved up from this new implant mm-hmm. business. He starts being real haphazard with. So he starts investing and he actually threw like £45,000 of money into a like building a building in Nicaragua, and then another £400,000 into this crazy plan to find and evacuate buried treasure in the Philippines. So, like, you know, those scammy things?
Why not?
This is all like we know at this point in our lives that like people advertising that uh-huh. shit, that is a scam.
Yeah, that
is a huge scam. Mm-hmm. Invest all your money. We're going to find like these veins of gold and mm-hmm. all this titanium or like all this treasure. And like there's like all this oil. And like if you invest, you're going to be like making money. Nobody ever fucking makes money. Sorry.
Right.
Like these startups that are in, it just never happens. Mm-hmm. Sorry. So he fronts the money. Months and months and months pass, and Colin received like next to no updates. And the whole thing, he started to get more suspicious that, oh my God, I have been scammed out of this outrageous amount of money. This sucks. In December of 2008, his finances are like a disaster. It's a disaster. He has fucked himself real bad with this stuff. And he gets on a plane and he travels to Manila, desperate to recover, like confront people and be like, you need to give me at least some of my money back. I gave you everything I have.
It's not going to happen.
So he finds his contact in Manila and his contact assures him that he's going to receive 2 gold bars as proof that they had a successful excavation. So Colin says, OK, I'm going to meet you. I'm going to meet you at this big hotel. I'm going to retrieve that. And Colin agrees to meet him for this retrieval. And unfortunately for Colin, the box his contact provided didn't contain any gold at all and just aww. A few silver dollars and $30 in banknotes.
Future $30.
He does. This part of the story is very satisfying because I'm like, yeah, you did get scammed real bad.
Did.
You deserve this and a million times worse, my friend. I want to know what he told his wife.
Right.
I lost all of her money.
Yep.
Because I thought there was buried treasure in the Philippines. And this man I don't know promised me that I'd make lots of money.
He said I would.
The man said I would. It's wild. So, it occurs to Colin that there are no riches and that I have been conned. And I've lost all of our savings. And
I love when a con man gets conned.
Me too, actually. I'm finding that out right now in this moment. I love this. So he lost all of his savings. He returns home to Northern Ireland and he tells his wife, Kyle, what happened. She fucking kicks him out of the house. She says, fuck you. Mm-hmm. You lost all of our money. And Colin takes the very little money he has left and he moves into a trailer park. And he continues to work as a dentist, but without any like real sustainable mm-hmm. amount of money and like no savings mm-hmm. and he has no support, no family. And his church is kind of like not there because he's kind of like spiraled out of control in this moment. And he's been out and traveling and, you know, he's kind of like fallen out of favor with the church a little bit here, too. So Colin starts feeling like God is punishing him for his crimes.
He is.
This must be. You're like,
I mean, matter of fact, he is.
Sir, you are correct. You are being actively punished by sweet Jesus for your crimes. So he had spent at this point like 20 years trying to outrun his past, basically. And finally, he had confessed to Kyle, but none of it had provided any sort of solution for him. And the only option left, according to him at this point, was coming clean, like actually coming clean. So on January 29th of 2009, at the behest of his estranged wife, Kyle, 49-year-old Colin Howell met with three church elders at his family home. And Colin started telling them that back in 1991, he had murdered Leslie Howell and Trevor Buchanan. And the elders were shocked to realize that Colin was actually this shitty. And like, you're supposed to be this good Christian man, you know, and you're supposed to be like a respectable mm-hmm. member of the mm-hmm. community. And they're just like, wow. Mm-hmm. So they immediately call the police. Good. Thank you, church elders, who took Colin into custody that very morning. And not long afterwards, the police also arrested Hazel Buchanan for her involvement in the crime. After 18 years, she must have been pretty shocked to finally see cops knocking on her door about all that. Hazel refused to like fully admit to her complicity in the murders. She did take her case to trial. She claimed she was manipulated by Colin, which I don't doubt to some degree that he manipulated
her. But
I think she knew what was happening, though. Colin ended up actually testifying against her and very persuasively detailed her part in the crimes. Like she had to have administered the sedative. Colin wasn't even there.
Yeah.
So she at least did that much. Right. That could have killed him. You know what I mean? So a jury did find Hazel guilty of murder, and a judge sentenced her to 18 years in prison. Now, that's a long time, but her former boyfriend's sentence would be even longer. And in addition to admitting to the two murders, Colin also confessed to sexually assaulting his patients. And when the police followed up on his confession, that's when those six women came forward and attested that, yes, I believe I was a victim of this man. So again, we have no idea how many victims there were of sexual abuse. There could have been hundreds, but there are only six that we can confirm. And over the past decade,
I'm actually surprised that he really confessed all.
I know. I think he just, it's the religious guilt, man. This above all, this man was pious as shit, and it bit him in the ass.
How much time did he get?
Oh, we'll get there. Don't you worry. Now, over the past decade, more and more patients have come out about possible sexual abuse during their experiences with medical care in general. And this is something that is obviously really upsetting. But on the positive side, testimonies of survivors have increased public awareness and sensitivity on the issue. So there's a lot coming out about that. And people have put a lot of things in place. Like, for example, a lot of times if a male doctor is seeing a female patient, they will have a witness in the room with them or like a nurse at the bedside with them just to have that third person in there to provide, you know, a sense of security and comfort for the patients. Steps like that are taken these days, thankfully, to hopefully like mitigate any question as to, you know, inappropriate contact. But it's really sad that it's something that actually still happens in healthcare. And I've read about many dentists that have sexually abused their patients. I mean, we've talked about some pretty, I mean, one of the worst people we've ever talked about on this podcast was Dr. Howard Schneider. He was one of the worst people we have ever talked about on this show. And he was a dentist. And I don't understand how people this shitty can make it that far in life. I really don't. It's really upsetting. So, by 2010, Colin Howell had faced multiple criminal charges for both murder and sexual assault. And while awaiting trial, Colin was interviewed by three psychiatrists. And at first, it seemed like he attempted to pretend he suffered from some kind of mental illness. Like, at one point, he was saying that, like, he hears and sees things that aren't there, and that he was hearing his late wife's voice in his head, or, you know.
It's not a mental illness, it's karma.
No, honey, he knew exactly what he was doing, and like, it's very evident. So the psychiatrist saw right through this whole fucking song and dance. They did One of them said that he's probably a psychopath or like at least somewhat detached from humanity whatsoever. Another one concluded that Colin had a narcissistic personality disorder. Now that I can see. Because again, it's all about outward appearances. And then behind closed doors, they're an utter garbage human. Ultimately, nothing in Colin Howell's psychiatric makeup would have an effect on his trial and sentencing. And he was obviously in full mental command of his, you know, capacity during his crimes. I mean, if you hear him talk about it and you like look at the evidence, there's just no question.
Without a doubt.
You know, he knew exactly what he was doing.
You have no insanity case.
Nope. So on December 3rd of 2010, a judge sentenced 51-year-old Colin Howell to life in prison with a minimum of 21 years behind bars.
And that was in what year?
2010.
All right.
And a few months later, Colin Howell stood in front of a judge again for the sexual assaults committed during his time as a dentist, and he was given 5.5 years in prison. Not enough, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Which is to be served concurrently with his life sentence. So he's going to be at least 72 years old by the time he is eligible to apply for parole.
And that's if he gets it.
That's if he gets it. So.
Damn.
This guy is just one of the most callous, calculating, just menacing dudes I have read about. This guy is awful.
Without a doubt.
He's awful. And it's scary.
The one shocking thing to me is that he actually confessed willingly. Like, yeah. And I definitely get the whole religious guilt thing. We've dealt with a ton of narcissistic personality disorder folks, and they just deny till the end. You
so
know
it's
what I mean?
It's pretty wild like that he ever came
outlier,
forward.
You know?
And it's alarming that he would have never faced any consequences if he had
just kept
his mouth shut.
He had made it almost 20 years at that point.
They never would have known that nobody ever would have known about the sexual assaults or the murders if he had not confessed.
Wow.
How wild is that? It's like astonishing
it's
to think about.
It's terrible.
It's wild. He's pretty unimaginable as a human. It's terrifying to think about the people that we hold in such high regard in our communities.
What do you think his wife's doing right now?
That's a great question. I don't know. But it's so scary to think about these people that like that are upstanding members of our community that we hold in such high regard. And like,
you always got to keep your guard out.
You got to keep your fucking guard
you
up because no, you never know another human being. You never do.
Mm-hmm.
Like. At least from the outside. It's crazy.
For sure. Mm-hmm. As much as you think you know someone, do you?
Yeah.
That's such a crazy thought to think
it's
about.
It's wild.
But you have to have your guard up.
I know it. Yep.
Thank you for listening, everyone. You can check us out on Facebook at Med Crimes Podcast.
You can find us on YouTube at Med Crimes Podcast.
You can see what we're doing on Instagram at Med Crimes Podcast.
If you want to become a Patreon, you can find us at www.patreon.com/medcrimespodcast. It's fun there.
Send us any crazy stories, suggestions, topics, or even just drop a hello at medcrimes@gmail.com.
Stay safe out there and just, you know.
Watch out for the creeps.
Watch out for all them creeps. I promise you there's a lot of them and we don't know who any of them are.
None of them.
Bye.
Bye.
Ominous as shit, as usual. Bye. Good luck with your life with your creeps.
You all have creeps in your life.